All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Patreon edition of the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. Today, we are going to be discussing a subject that I don't know yet because D is going to surprise me, but I do know this. You have been waiting to tell me this incredible story. I don't know what it is yet, but it's like murder and mayhem and all the things. And you've promised me that it's a song that I know very well, or it involves something that I'm super familiar with.
There is absolutely no question that you know this song.
Okay.
We've actually just talked about this song before in another one of our episodes, but since we have well over 200 episodes at this point, that's not much of a clue for you. But we've also talked about other people who are involved with this song on entirely different episodes, which I'm not going to give away yet. But just to let everybody know what's going on, we are doing a everybody gets to hear this episode version of what's normally on our Patreon page only, right?
Right.
So if you join our Patreon page, you'll get access to all of our one-hit wonder episodes that nobody else except our Patreon members get access to. You can do that by going to patreon.com/surelypodcast. You can sign up for free. You can get the episodes for as little as $5 a month. If you go up in tiers, thank you. It helps support us. And we'll send you some free gifts too, which are pretty fun.
I sent some of that stuff out this week.
Yeah. And thank you guys so much for supporting us. Those Patreon members that we have, they're going to get the sneak preview of this episode before everybody else. But I'm genuinely excited to talk about this.
I was just going to interrupt you. Yeah. One of the fun things that we do in our Patreon episodes sometimes is that one person comes up with all the research and the history and things like that, and then you talk,
mm-hmm.
and you slowly unveil the story.
Yep.
And if I figure it out right off the bat, I'm not going to say anything, but guys at home, try to figure out what we're talking about.
Yes.
It's kind of a puzzle.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the last one of these episodes we had, you gave me a song from the 90s, mm-hmm. and by the time we got to the song, I was like, I kind of remember that song. Most of the songs that we have have been songs that everybody knows, right?
Right, right.
And I made the promise to you at that time, the next time that we come in and I'm doing a song for you, you will, without question, know what the song is. It is a one-hit wonder, but it may surprise you to have it called a one-hit wonder, okay?
Okay.
Probably nobody thinks of it as that, but technically it is. All right?
All right.
So I'm going to, as you mentioned, this story has theft, drug addiction, homicide, adultery, fatal car crash, and a Persian poem that's over 900 years old involved with it. So there's all kinds of things at play. So if there are people out there who are super familiar with this song, they're going to go, oh, that I know what that is already. I doubt a whole lot of people. I really know the song, and I was surprised to know what some of the basis for the song is. Yes, okay?
Yeah, okay, let's hear this.
All right.
Okay, I'm ready.
So, the group that put together this album was a super group, okay? It came together in the spring of 1970, and a year later, they'd be done. They released one album, and even the album did badly, and even this song, when it was released as a single, it did badly. Several of our other Patreon episodes, we've like, hey, this song came out in, you know, 83, but it didn't become a hit until 1989, weirdly, you know?
Right.
So this is kind of one of those things. So the members of this group, I'm going to give you some names. I'm doing the Paul Harvey kind of, you know, hide the rabbit thing right now. So first guy is Del, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, you're thinking of John Candy right now. I know you are.
Del Griffin. Shower curtain ring guy.
Yes. So Del was a nickname that his buddy Tony Ashton gave him. And so I'm going to use Del as the nickname so that you don't know who I'm talking about. All right.
Okay.
The other guy is a guy named Jamie. Again, nickname from his wife. She called him Jamie. Not what most people called him. Okay.
Okay.
So we got Del and Jamie, and they are the two writers given credit for this song.
Okay. All right, all right.
And then in the rest of the group, you've got a guy named Robert.
Okay.
He plays keyboards. And you got a guy from Tulsa, Oklahoma, your hometown.
Yes, it is.
Yep. He happened to be born on the same day as Paul McCartney.
Okay.
Yeah. So now we know Paul McCartney wasn't born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, so it's not Paul McCartney. It's a different guy. But famous musician, right?
Wait. This is a famous musician from Tulsa in this band.
In this band, yes.
Okay. All right. Yep. Keep going.
Okay. So I'm going to give you a little bit about the album, and then I'm going to go back, and we're going to do some history on it, all right?
Okay.
Okay. So the album, failure, critically, failure commercially. Like, nobody went out and bought it, and none of the critics liked it.
Okay.
This song that I'm talking about is 13th song on the album, 13th track. And they released it as a single, just didn't do very much, didn't chart at all in the UK, barely made it in the charts in the US, but then came again in 1972 and got a little more popular, came again in 1974, 1977, and then like a cover of it nearly two decades later ends up at number 12 in the US Billboard Hot 100, okay?
Okay, all right.
All right.
Yeah, good.
So, since the time that this song was recorded, and everybody hated it when it came out, VH1 and Rolling Stone have both put it on their greatest albums of all time list.
What?
Okay. Most of the songs on the album that were not cover songs, because they did a few cover songs, most of the songs on the album that were not cover songs were written by Del and Robert, the keyboard player, okay?
Yep.
But this song that I'm talking about was by Del and Jamie, all right?
Okay.
So Del had come from a couple of supergroups with a lot of success, okay?
Okay.
He actually, by many people, has been equated with divinity as far as his musical skills are concerned. And Jamie was even better as a musician. These are the two writers of this song. So
you got a guy who plays like God, and then a guy who's better than God.
Yes. Okay. That is about right. Okay.
Yeah.
So they get together. They have come from this other group that you probably don't know, but I'm not going to mention them anyway. And they're really both of them just sidemen in the group. They're on an ensemble. They're not mentioned in the name of the group. They're not singing the songs. They're just a couple of side musicians. Okay.
All right.
The name of this band actually comes from a mistake. At their first club that they played on this tour, the announcer says a different name than what they have chosen as their name, but they like the different name better, and so they go with that.
Okay.
The guy who wrote the Rolling Stone Illustrated History of Rock and Roll, Dave Marsh, said this about this song, okay? Quoting, "There are few moments in the repertoire of recorded rock where a singer has reached so deeply into himself that the effect of hearing them is akin to witnessing a murder or a suicide. This song is the greatest of them."
Okay.
Okay. So now we'll go to a little history, all right?
Yeah.
So Jamie, born July 1945, passed away a couple years ago. The guys from Toto, David Page, Jeff Porcu, the guys who were the best studio musicians of the early 80s, the guys who played the music on Thriller, they described Jamie as someone you look to with reverence. Like, if you wanted to know how to play your instrument, this is the guy you go to. You listen to what he's done and you emulate him. I mean, they were in awe of him. That's how good he was.
Okay.
He was a protege of one of Phil Spector's group of session musicians who would become known as the Wrecking Crew,
mm-hmm.
and he became a member of the Wrecking Crew himself. He played on Pet Sounds. He played on Good Vibrations. He played on Classical Gas. He played on You're So Vain by Carly Simon.
Yeah. Song about Warren Beatty.
Yes. There you go. Right. And countless others. I mean, his music catalog is gigantic.
Okay.
And he not only knew how to play like any kind of music, he knew how to take a song and make it a hit song, right? Like with Carly Simon's You're So Vain, they had already recorded and they're like, this isn't good. Let's bring Jamie in. They brought him in. Carly Simon came in thinking the song was done. She sees him in there and she loses her mind. But then she gets this huge hit with this song and she has to eat her words, right?
Okay.
Okay. He also played with Alice Cooper, Joe Cocker, Harry Nilsson, Frank Zappa, and Steely Dan, both of whom we know were ultra particular about how good the people were that were playing with him, right?
Watch the Yacht Rock documentary if you don't know what we're talking about.
Exactly. Or Frank Zappa, listen to our Toto episode see how he ran.
Humiliated Steve Lukather in front of everybody. Luther
through the ringer. That's right. So that was Jamie.
Okay.
Dell, born 3.5 months before Jamie was born, across the world. Jamie was born in L.A. Dell is born just outside of London, where for the first decade of his life, he thinks that he's got an older sister. But 11 years old, he learns that the girl he thought was his older sister is actually his mother. And the people that he thought were mom and dad are actually grandma and grandpa.
The tale as old as time, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Right. We've had that a few times, right?
Right.
So his mother had had a liaison with a Canadian Air Force soldier at 15-ish.
Yeah.
And so the pregnancy resulted, and Dell was born out of wedlock. Interestingly, she actually marries a different Canadian soldier and moves off to Germany and leaves Dell with her parents to be raised by them. The good news is they're not too badly off, and they spoil him a little bit, and eventually they buy him some musical instruments that he learns how to play.
Okay.
He started playing at the age of 13, lost interest, but then as he got into high school, he realized he was terrible at sports, picked up the music again, and that became what he was good at.
Okay.
He ends up getting accepted into the Kingston College of Art, but he gets expelled after the first year because he's so focused on music and not on art. His musical influences are Buddy Holly and Big Bill Brunzi, the black blues musician from Mississippi, okay?
Okay.
So he's out of college. He starts busking. As a young, as a teenager, he starts busking, and he gets noticed. And he goes from first band to second band to third band. And by 1966, at 21 years old, he forms a group himself, after being involved with a pretty successful group, forms a trio himself that becomes world famous.
Okay, keep going.
So that was 66.
Okay.
By 1968, this world-famous band disbands. They're done. They're done with each other.
2 years?
2 years, and they're done. 1969, the next year, he forms another supergroup, but they would release only one album with a very controversial album cover, an LP with only 6 songs, one of which would be a hit, one of which you know, but they dissolved after only 7 months. And he's realized he is tired of the limelight, and that's why he decides to go with this other singer-songwriter duo where they're the named members of the group, and he's a member of the ensemble. He's a sideman with these other guys called the Friends.
Okay.
During this time, he was working on albums with members, former members of the Rolling Stones, former members of the Beatles. He did his own solo album that didn't do much, but finally, he and several of these other members of this band would form this new band that gives us a song that we're talking about today.
Okay.
Okay.
So far, I have no idea where we're going. Okay.
Okay. So just think of it as a movie, right? This new band of people that are all incredible musicians, they start doing tiny little club shows in Britain.
And these are guys who have had major hits,
Major hits, major success, names you would recognize for sure. So they do this tour of small clubs in Britain and get their groove down. And they're like, okay, we're going to go to Miami and we're going to record our first album together. Okay. So they go down to Miami to record. And the guy they have producing their album is a guy named Tom Dowd. Tom Dowd also happens to be producing another group's album called the Allman Brothers.
Yes.
You've heard of them,
right? I do know the Allman Brothers, of course.
And so after Dell had been there for a few days, Tom, the producer, says, hey, you should go see the Allman Brothers play. They're going to play at this outside benefit concert. And Dell's like, heck yeah, I love Dwayne Allman. I would love to listen to him play. Well, as it turns out, Dwayne Allman is also a big fan of Dell's. And so, because he is famous, he gets to, like, go in front of the barricade, in front of the front row, and he and his friends are watching the Allman Brothers play. And at the point that Dwayne Allman turns around and sees Dell standing in the crowd, he freezes in the middle of his guitar solo. And fortunately, the other lead guitarist is able to pick it up, and then he sees why he's frozen, and he just turns away so that he doesn't have to get frozen as well, because they're so in awe of this guy who's watching them, right?
Okay, awesome.
After the show, they get to meet face-to-face. They're kind of gushing over each other, talking about how much they enjoy each other's music. And Dwayne says to Del, hey, I'd really love to come and listen to you guys record. And Del is like, heck with that. Get your guitar. Come on, let's go tonight. Let's record together. They spend the entire night just riffing with each other. And Tom describes it as like the most beautiful bromance you've ever seen. Like, they don't say, can you play this again? It was just, they would riff off of each other and gush and talk about the techniques of the guitar and all of this other stuff. And they formed a brotherly bond. As it turns out, for this album, even though this is a four-piece band, Dwayne records almost every single song with them. So it's a five-member band for the recording of the album.
Okay.
So he records several of the songs. His band is still out playing, so he leaves for a few days and goes to play with them on their tour. And then he comes back, and on September 9th, 1970, they record a cover of Little Wing, and they record this song that I'm talking to you about today, this one hit.
Okay. All right.
So this is September 9th, 1970.
Okay.
Tragically, a week later, Del buys a left-handed Fender Stratocaster for Jimi Hendrix as a thank you for letting him play Little Wing on this album. The next day, Jimi Hendrix dies, and they have to take the song off of the album.
Ooh, okay.
So there's this band has done a Little Wing cover that you haven't heard, okay?
Okay.
So after they've recorded the album, Del says, Dwayne, come tour with us. You're a key member of this band. I mean, this song that I'm talking about has an unmistakable guitar riff, and Dwayne Allman is the one who is responsible for the guitar riff. Okay?
Okay.
It also has an unmistakable piano riff, but I'll get into that in just a minute, okay?
Okay.
So Dwayne says, I would love to, Del, but I've got my brothers, and we've developed these shows already. I can't go with you. I have to go with them.
Right.
The album gets released in November of 1970. Less than a year later, Dwayne is riding on his Harley on Hillcrest Avenue in Macon, Georgia. As he is approaching Bartlett Street, a flatbed boom truck comes to a sudden stop in the intersection. Dwayne does a quick swerve to try to miss it, but ends up hitting it. He's thrown. The motorcycle is thrown and lands on top of him and crushes him. He's alive when he gets to the hospital, but ultimately passes away due to his internal injuries. And so we've lost one of the best guitarists of the 70s.
Okay. That's Dwayne Allman.
Dwayne Allman, yeah.
I think maybe Greg Allman was married to Cher. Okay. Keep going.
So Del has now lost his idol, Jimi Hendrix. He's lost the guy that he has described as the musical brother I'd never had but wish I did. He's lost that guy as well, right? So with that loss, the kind of failure of the album and the song, the band is just not going to stay together. They try to get together for a second album, and it just falls apart almost immediately. Del is also dealing with drug and alcohol issues that he's got, trying to deal with the pain of this, and another issue that I'll bring up here in a second. But this tragedy is not the last one we're going to talk about today, okay? So band breaks up. All the musicians go their separate ways. But as I mentioned, Carl, the Oklahoma boy, he'd move back to Oklahoma.
He'd
continue to play music, but ultimately in May of 1980, he would die in Claremore, Oklahoma, from the effects of drug and alcohol. Okay. Jamie also continued to play for big name bands, because he was an unparalleled virtuoso. He played drums as a way to escape from life, okay? And that's why he was so good. But few people realized that what he was escaping from were actually voices in his head that were talking to him that weren't really there. the loudest of which apparently was the voice of his mother. I know, you're thinking about Psycho, right?
Psycho.
Right.
Mother!
Yeah. He tried over and over again to deal with this by going to mental health specialists, none of whom correctly diagnosed him. They all attributed it to alcohol, which, of course, he was taking drugs and alcohol to deal with the voices in addition to playing the drums.
Probably didn't help.
And so, on June 3rd, 1983, his wife, Renee, the one who called him Jamie, came home to find him holding some string and a piece of paper and saying, "I know what you've done. I know what you did. I know that you're communing with the devil." And she's like, "What the heck?" And he starts attacking her. And she's thinking, "This is how I'm going to die." He's attacking her. And then for some unknown reason, he stops and he goes to the kitchen to make himself a drink. And so at that moment, she gets the heck out of the house. He comes back into the room.
This is Jamie we're talking about.
This is Jamie.
Okay.
Jamie comes back into the room, realizing that she's gone, and he goes over to his mother's house, his 71-year-old mother, who he then attacks with a hammer and then ultimately stabs to death with a butcher knife.
What? Okay.
They find him a day or two later in his apartment, laying face down on the ground, crying hysterically. He is ultimately arrested for the murder. After he is arrested, he is finally accurately diagnosed with acute schizophrenia. And the court accepts the diagnosis of acute schizophrenia, but because of changes in the federal insanity defense law, California had changed their laws, and he was not allowed to use the insanity defense at his trial.
Okay.
And ultimately, he gets sentenced to 16 years in prison. It's 1983. So he's first eligible for parole in 1991, but he gets denied because he doesn't show up for the parole hearing. And then he gets denied again the next time because he doesn't show up for the parole hearing. And he continues not to show up over and over again, year after year.
Where is he?
He's ultimately moved to a mental criminal ward, but he is by all effects incarcerated. He is a prisoner, just at a mental facility, a convict mental facility in California, okay?
All right.
Ultimately, as I said, he passed away March of 2023, never having been rehabilitated from his schizophrenia, just stopped playing music other than to occasionally when somebody would be playing, might sit in and do a little bit here and there, but wouldn't communicate with family, wouldn't communicate with anybody else, just kind of this amazing, arguably the greatest drummer of the 70s. Disappears from the face of the earth for all of this.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Keep going.
So back to the song. Okay. In addition to playing the drums on this song, Jamie also contributed the piano part, which, as I said, is absolutely iconic. And this is what gives him his writing credit. But here's the problem. He stole the piano riff from his girlfriend, who we've talked about before, named Rita Coolidge.
Rita Coolidge?
All-time high. Go check out our Octopussy versus Never Say Never Again episode.
And our best James Bond theme songs.
You got it.
Rita Coolidge. She also sang, she had a hit song called, I think it's called Higher and Higher.
Yep. Yeah, she had several big hits. And this could have been one of them, except she had played it with the keyboardist, and with her then-boyfriend, Jamie. They played it together, and they're like, "Hey, we know you guys are about to record this album." They played it for Dell, and she never heard anything. She thought, okay, well, I guess they're not going to use it, until a year later, she's getting a photo shoot done for her album, and they've got the radio playing over the PA, and she hears this song come on, and she's like, "Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah,
I wrote this. What is it?" And they're like, "No, you couldn't have written this. This is a brand new album, right?" And so she's livid. She goes to Tower Records. She pulls the album to see if she's gotten a writing credit. She hasn't.
Right.
She calls Robert Stigwood, who we've talked about before, who is the manager for the band, you know, and she's like, hey.
Wait a minute. Robert Stigwood, Bee Gees. Grease.
You got it.
Keep going. Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah. Okay. And so she's like, hey, this is my song. You guys took this and you didn't give me writing credit. And his words to her are, so what? You're a girl. What are you going to do? And her record label, A&M, is like, yeah, we can't fight Robert Stigwood. His pockets are gigantic.
He has big pockets.
And so she ends up with no writing credit on the song. Now,
they not have like laws and things that, well, she could have.
You got to have the money to hire an attorney, and an attorney that will last against whoever Robert Stigwood hires.
And Octopussy wasn't.
It wasn't out there yet.
Okay.
So she gets no writing credit.
Okay.
She actually, her sister, Priscilla Coolidge, okay, releases a song 1973 called Time. If you listen to Time, you'll hear that same piano riff in it. Okay. Now, of course, they can't go say, hey, you stole the piano riff, because she wrote it, and it would just open that door for her, right?
Right.
So when Jamie and Rita were dating, at some point his demons came out and he punched her in the face during a tour, and like she did the rest of the tour with a black eye and never had anything to do with him again after that.
Okay.
And then he goes and steals her song and puts it in this song, right?
All right, man, you got me on the hook here. I'm ready to hear this.
Okay, so I've led you with all these clues, right? And some people who know the story of Jamie, who most people call Jim, will know the song probably that I'm talking about. But I haven't gotten you there yet, right?
I am not. You're not no there close. Yet. Okay, yeah,
I'm about to get you there, right?
Okay.
I know that you're going to know it when I start giving you these clues.
Okay.
Now, Del, in addition to dealing with the struggles of finding a band that's going to work and this limelight and then not the limelight, he is struggling because he is infatuated with someone who, even in the 70s, that kind of relationship was frowned upon, right?
Okay.
He is struggling with this, and he talks to his friend named Ian Dallas, and Ian Dallas just happens to be converting to Islam at the same time that they're having this conversation. And Ian Dallas says, there's a poem you need to read. Okay. And he gives them this poem, and it's about this princess who falls in love with a poet, but the poet is poor, and the princess's father says, no, you can't have anything to do with him, and marries her off to a rich man. And so she's with a man she doesn't love, and this poor poet literally goes out in the wilderness and goes mad because he knows she loves him, but he can't be with her, right? It's driving him insane. Okay. So Del reads this poem and is like, this is my predicament. Because he's in love with the wife of his best friend. The bells are going off for you now. And I think they're probably going off for some other people too. His best friend.
Okay.
Is a member of the Beatles. Would you like to tell the rest of the story?
All right. Well, I'm not going to interrupt your story, but clearly we are now talking about Patty Boyd, George Harrison, and Eric Clapton.
Yeah. Del was the name that Eric Clapton was given by his friend. Okay. When they first put the band together, his friend said, because he didn't want to be the limelight, right? He's like, you should call the band Del and the Dynamos. The announcer for their first show, knowing that this is Eric Clapton, looks at this Del and the Dynamos, gets it flipped around, combines the names, and says, Derek and the Dominoes. And they're like, heck yeah, that's it. That's going to be the name of our band. The poem that was the inspiration for the words of this song is called Layla and the Majin, or Layla and the Madman.
Man, this is awesome. I mean, we talked about Layla in our Goodfellas episode.
Yeah.
Of course, Eric Clapton needs no introduction by us.
Right.
We've talked about George Harrison. We've talked about Patty Boyd even. I can't remember exactly what we were doing, but...
Well, she was the one that inspired like four different mega hits, right?
Yeah.
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 And so, yes, the rest of the story is, of course, ultimately that she gets divorced from George Harrison. And once he finds out about this affair and her love for him, and he's even really not that mad about it because he himself had been unfaithful during their marriage.
What?
The Beatle, surprisingly, yeah. Yes. Even, I think, fooled around with Ringo Starr's wife. But
Barbara Bach? Go back to our James Bond episode.
No.
Okay.
But George Harrison is actually at their wedding. He goes to the wedding of Patty Boyd and Eric Clapton.
Okay.
And then, of course, Eric Clapton stays married to her until 1989. I guess he could live without her, apparently.
Yes.
And then about 3 years later, Eric Clapton does an Unplugged album where he covers this song. It's the 90s hit where it reaches number 12.
I remember when that song came out that summer.
Yeah.
And I remember the Unplugged. Was it MTV Unplugged that they recorded?
I don't know if it was strictly MTV or if they had just done their own Unplugged thing. I don't remember.
So tell me about the drummer. He's one of the guys in Derek and the Dominoes?
Yeah. So the drummer, Jamie, is Jim Gordon. And Jim Gordon, like... The beginning of the video, the first video that I watched on Jim Gordon is Jeff Porcaro saying, he's played on this song and this song and this song and this song. And if you want to know how to play the drums, you need to go listen to it and imitate everything that he does because he's the best drummer that's ever lived.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a great story, man. I was on the hook the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good since I knew kind of the players involved. So
exactly.
Wow, and Layla is an all-time great song, you know?
Yeah, so surprisingly, it was not a big hit when it first got released, but that's because they took the song and they cut it in half. They cut out that piano coda that Rita Coolidge had come up with, that Jim Gordon had stolen. They cut it out. And then, for a reason that I can't find, it was released a couple of years later, and they included that second part, and that's when it really started to catch fire.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Scorsese has used it multiple times in his movies.
I know that it's a big feature for Goodfellas. I don't know if he's used it other places, but yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Great story, man.
Thanks.
Wonderful.
By the way, the acoustic version of Layla won the Grammy for Best Rock Song in 1993.
I think also that summer he had a big hit with Tears in Heaven.
Yeah. Of course, about the death of him and Patty's child.
Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah.
I think he fell out of a window or something.
Yep.
Awesome. Great story.
Thanks, man.
All right. Listen, if you enjoy incredible behind-the-scenes stories like this, now we do this once a month. You ought to come check us out on Patreon and get these episodes. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, they really are. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Hope you enjoy this. Hope you enjoy our other episodes. Be sure and hit that subscribe button, follow button, whatever you need to do. See you guys next time.
Awesome. There's a time machine. Surely we won't cross the streams. Surely this can't be the best there is. Surely you're my rocket queen. Got my back against the record machine. Surely you can't be serious. Freddy, Jason, Michael, scary. Our dogs and cats, mass hysteria. Feels like the dark side of the wall.
Shirley. Surely you can't. You can't be. Surely you can't. You can't be. Surely you can't.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.